This is a story about stories. About the passage of time. It's not just whose army wins. It's whose story wins, says Joseph Nye, the political scientist. Meaning the stories we tell about ourselves, the way we conceptualize ourselves here in the present, has the power to shape and define our futures. A forest in Norway is slowly growing. In 100 years' time, the paper from these trees, young saplings now, will form an anthology of books. Every year, a new acclaimed writer contributing a text. But by the time these works are read, you and I and everyone in this programme will be long gone, because these works aren't for us, they're for future generations, communicating across space and time over many, many years. This is the Future Library. And it starts with the artist Katie Patterson, who speaks to us from her native Scotland, from another forest. All right, so Katie, you put roots in the ground all around me here in the Future Forest. You can see the work literally taking shape all around us. But how did you first come up with the idea?
I'm a daydreamer. I was drawing tree rings on a train, and I saw a very visual connection between tree rings and chapters in a book. And I imagined a forest becoming a library and growing a book over a century that nobody would read until the trees had ended their life.
And how did you get the support needed to turn this dream that you had into reality?
Well, when I had the idea, I thought nobody in their right mind is going to commission a 100-year artwork that's very abstract, you know, it involves a forest, it involves 100 authors, it involves a century. So I truly thought nobody would want to do it. But then I went to Norway, I met the incredible Anna Beate Hovind, and she had a vision and long-sightedness, and she was commissioning projects related to slow space and slow time. And so the idea of Future Library, it's organic, it's growing, it's slow, it thinks of the long term, the future. And she said, why not? Let's do it. So that was 11 years ago. Now we're kind of deep into it. But there's no way it would have happened if it didn't have somebody running it who had a big imagination.
Talk us through the planting process and initially the selection of this space for the Future Library.
So we planted over 1,000 Norwegian spruce trees, and we did so about 8 years ago now, and that should print around 3,000 anthologies in 100 years. So we planted the trees in a really special gathering. We were given an area of forest by the city, and we got to work with the foresters to choose exactly where that would be. So we chose a very kind of natural amphitheatre type space so that we could imagine authors reading and people gathering together around the trees. So it feels very deep within the forest, but in fact, it's not that far from the centre of Oslo. People can get there and we can all, you know, publicly gather together.
And this project is so much about ideas, about the intangible, I suppose, but all of a sudden now we're seeing things physically take shape and take form. How does it feel?
Oh, it feels amazing. I mean, I'm still continually surprised and shocked of where we are with the project. You know, it was a real dream those years ago. Now it's become, you know, more than I could ever have imagined. We've got incredible authors involved. We've just opened the room, which is made of the trees that we cut down when we were making space for the Future Library. And we've now on to our 8th author. So it's real, it's happening. Crowds are gathering each year to come to the forest, and it feels very tactile. In the beginning, it was an idea, but now the root systems have taken place.
And talking specifically about the authors, is there something that binds and links their ideas?
So we formed a Future Library Trust, and we invite really amazing, renowned authors of this year. Some of the connections are to do with ecology, but mainly time, deep time. Because this project is something that goes beyond our, you know, everyday time horizons. And so authors like Margaret Atwood and David Mitchell have, you know, they write kind of time travelling works. Sean writes connected to nature, and Elif Tufak to myths and stories. So every author has a really different take on it. But they all kind of become bonded by the trees. And in 100 years' time, they will be, you know, the authors of the deep past at that point.
And how important is this? Is it to do this for future generations?
I think we are living in a real time of crisis where short-termism is the rule. And it's caused so many of the, you know, long-term problems that we face right now. So I think expanding our time horizons beyond our human life or even just into the next few generations is something that we're all needing to do. And it's, you know, it's a rooting thing to do. And so I think the project captures people because it's hopeful. You know, it's simply saying, I see you to the future generations, and we want to leave you something. It's a, you know, a tiny gift, but here's a book that was written not for us, but for you.
And Katie, we know that attitudes change. We know that the world changes. We know that the environment is sadly changing for the worse as well. But how do you think your work will be perceived a couple of generations from now?
I hope that the readers of this book in the far future are happy that, you know, somebody has seen them, or and that authors are kind of taking their time to look forward and imagine a different readership that's not only us are alive right now.
There's something slightly anachronistic about putting anything on paper these days. Why was it important to commit this work to something physical, something that you can hold, something that future generations can hold in their hands?
It's so material, you know, you don't see most of it, but it's trees growing that will become these books. And it was really important to me that we went back to the physical book, you know, just as it is. Who knows what it'll become in 100 years? It may be exactly the same, or, you know, there might be forms of reading that we just can't even imagine right now. But I think Umberto Eco compared the book to the wheel, the invention of the wheel. It kind of can't really be improved on. And so I hope, of course, that it will be exactly the same. But of course, we're looking into preservation techniques to take care of these trees, have the kind of printing presses ready for when the book can come to fruition. So, yeah, it's kind of getting back to the essence of bookmaking and the essence of where books come from. And I think that materiality and the connection to nature through the forest is something that we all crave. You know, we're in a terrible situation where libraries are closing, forests are being sold off. And so I think this project comes at a time where, you know, it's not a public service that we're offering, but it's a community experience. It's long term. And it's kind of saying to us, we need to break out of this short termism. You know, we've got to hold the future generations within our sight, you know, within our hearts even, and make a place for them.
Bringing the project to life here in Norway is Anna Beate Hovind, the producer, commissioner and chairperson of the Future Library Trust.
Katie's ideas are so crazy. So, of course, when she first proposed it, I figured, how am I going to ever dare to tell the board, the people that are giving money to this project? Because I think, honestly, we're out of practice thinking long term, so that to convince a politician that usually plan 2 or 4 years, or business people to propose a work for 100 years, it's totally out of the box. And I think they would think risk assessment and stop it. It's impossible. So I waited a little bit. I got on with the practicalities. So I started with the forest where we are now, because I figured that's a very concrete thing. So, and I think what actually happened, I couldn't foresee that though, but when the foresters were approached and somebody from the art field liked their forest, that was kind of a love affair. Mm-hmm. This part, the closest forest to the city, was bought up by the municipality, the city of Oslo, more than 100 years ago, which was a very broad and bold decision making. And it was done that for us to, the citizens, to enjoy it and share it and use it. So the forest further north of here is actually privately owned. So I thought that bold idea, more than 100 years ago, fit so much to this idea. So I thought, well, this we should start with the municipality, because I love the idea of the commons and it's all ours. So I started with the director of the forestry in the municipality of Oslo. So I went to his office and I was terrified asking for a forest, quite unusual, I think. Can you imagine? This man just said, why not? And that's when I knew this was going to happen. So he set us up on a blind date with the foresters. And we met them just down here. And we went for a walk. And Katie got to choose, actually, the forest, the part. So they had several points or several spots. And Katie chose this exact spot where we're sitting now.
So you put down roots. The trees have started to grow. The authors are committing their works. How do you go about the process of choosing who submits their work?
We set up a trust at the same time as we started working with the project, because we knew that 100 Yen needed someone to look after it for 100 years. So it is the board of the trust that chooses authors. And Katie, as the artist, has set up two criteria: imagination and time.
There is the stark reality that none of us here, you nor I or the team around us, will be alive to see the conclusion of this project. How does that make you feel?
Well, I knew I would die anyway without this project, so I'm quite practical about that. I think the short-termism we've been caught in for many years is a big threat to us. So I think to have a work like this that forces us to think beyond our time, cross-generational, is what gives me hope.
The hope is that the author's ideas will grow through the trees themselves, that the rings will become like the chapters of a book. The first author to submit her work is one of the world's greatest living authors, Margaret Atwood, whose work makes imaginary leaps into the past and the future.
Welcome to the forest here in Oslo as the first author to hand over a new manuscript to us.
It does appeal to that side of us who, as children, buried things here and there, little trinkets, little boxes, hoping that somebody would dig them up later.
We are now going to announce the title. It's the only part that you will know for 100 years. But I'm sure some of you will stick around until then, so you can read the rest of it. The title is Scribbler Moon. It gives you a lot of room for speculation.
Be careful, it's a part. Thank you.
It's very optimistic to believe, to do a project that believes that there will be people in 100 years, that those people will still be reading, that they will be interested in opening all of these boxes and seeing what's inside them, and that we will be able to communicate across time, which is what any book is in any case. It's always a communication across space and time. This one is just a little bit longer.
Thank you, Anna.
Over the years, more authors have joined the anthology. All of them, of course, tasked with keeping their work an absolute secret.
Yes, it is kind of mad, but there's good mad and bad mad, and I think this is good mad.
It's trees, it's books, it's a circle, it's pulp, it's organic matter turning into this stuff, turning into that. And then the words get printed on them. I love that. I liked the me that believed in it more than I liked the me that didn't believe in it.
One of the things that really proved to me that I'm taking part in a game is that it really challenges all the aspects of writing, all the aspects of being an author. The Future Library is really a hard game to play for an author, but joyful as well. You're writing a work that will lay dormant for 100 years almost, for those of us who take part in the beginning. It was very problematic in the beginning to think about it, to think about not being able to receive any sort of response to your work. I'm not allowed to talk about anything that is going on in the text itself, but I can say that I slowly came to the point of making the text in some way a response to the project itself.
The project is the most beautiful part of the project. Someone who is the one 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 who is the 그것을 넘겨받아서 그것을 계속하는 사람들이 있을 거 아니에요. 그리고 설령 뭐 아주 비관적으로 생각해서 그때까지 뭐 인류가 살아남지 못한다 해도 그런 노력은 계속 될 것이고 누군가가 그것을 열심히 할 것이라는 어떤 신뢰가 있는 거고 저도 그 신뢰를 신뢰합니다. 그래서
In the Norwegian capital, the pace of life moves much, much faster than in the forest. It's here at Oslo's Deichman Library where the works will be held for the next century.
The thing about the future library is that you have to go looking for it. It doesn't come to you up escalators past austere steel bookshelves. But when you find it, it's like no library you've ever seen before. It is a soft, organic space, a piece of the natural world, a forest here in the centre of Oslo. Before going in, it invites you to take off your shoes, as you would do going into a sacred space, which is precisely what this is.
It contains the atmosphere, even the smell of the forest. These bands of wood, layer upon layer, like the rings of a tree that we're now inside. And behind these apertures of light are where the texts are stored. The name of the author and the date in which the work is submitted engraved upon the side. Anyone can come, sit and enjoy this silent space, but nobody's allowed to read what's contained within. The space of contemplation is also known as the Silent Room. It faces in the direction of the future library forest, holding the manuscripts that, year upon year, will be handed over, awaiting to be printed on paper that will be made from the very trees that grow just a few kilometres away. Omar Sami Gamal, Vice Mayor of Oslo, is one of the custodians of the work.
Firstly, how does it feel to be a custodian of such an important art project? These texts obviously are being kept safely here in the library for the next 100 years. That's quite a task, quite a responsibility.
It absolutely is. Well, it's both a responsibility and it's also a big honour to host this this collection. And so we both see it as a responsibility, but it's also a testament to the future. That we should work for democracy, and both climate change and for the library, to protect the library itself.
Yeah, and talking about climate change, obviously everybody's worried about rising sea levels. It's hard to imagine what a city like Oslo is going to be like in 100 years' time. How can you ensure the safety of these works?
We can't, actually. We can't be 100% sure that the library won't burn and the sea levels won't ruin the library. Mm. But we'll do what we can to protect it. And we have made this contract with the future library. Yeah. And well, this is it. We try our best, and that's also what we should do with climate change and all the problems coming at us. Try to do our best, be honest, and that's it. That's what we can do.
What does this mean for the city of Oslo itself, for Oslo's story?
Yeah, at least we try, and we want to be part of the world. We know that Oslo and Norway isn't the center of the world, and so we try to do what we can and to make this world a better place.
If we think where Norway was only 100 years ago, I mean, am I right in thinking the oil hadn't really been discovered at that point?
Exactly.
It was a largely fishing-driven economy. Mm. Now we're sitting in this super sophisticated space with a state-of-the-art art project, secure and safe upstairs. Can you use your imagination and try and imagine what Oslo and Norway will be like in 100 years' time?
If we survive the climate change and all the problems facing us, I think it will be a good place. The people here are humble, and we try to share our goods with everybody, and look at people as our brothers and sisters. And if we kind of protect that, I think we'll manage, and we'll keep on being a great place. But the thing is, if not the rest of the world is a great place as well, it will never be good here.
Do you think that's why Norway's been chosen for this? That it is, in your eyes at least, a safe place?
Yeah, probably. I think so. But here we have this stable political situation and stuff. But I don't agree with the people that say that Oslo is the only place this could happen. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it could happen other places as well. Mm-hmm. But as we see it as this testament to and responsibility as politicians to try to solve these problems facing us, and this is the testament. So it's not bigger than that, actually. Well, it's quite big.
And very lastly, how does it feel knowing that you're not going to be alive when the first stories are made public?
Well, I think it's quite okay, actually. This is our gift to the generations coming after us. And so we'll try to protect it and to make sure that the generations get the chance to read it.
There's a reason why in English we call the pages of a book leaves. There is a strong relationship between the written word and the natural world in this work. A project that moves at a very, very different pace than the one that we're used to. As the century unfolds, stories await.